Hello everyone, my name is Anne Teato and welcome to episode 64 of the Psychic Matters podcast. The sun is out here in the UK and I tell you something, the sun has arrived inside of me. I have read an incredible book this month. It's called 8 Secrets to Powerful Manifesting, How to Create the Reality of Your Dreams. And it's written by my guest today, Mandy Morris. Well, I've been following her instructions in the book, and you know, I'm so much lighter of heart, and I've begun manifesting the most amazing things. I can't wait for you to listen to this interview. But just before we get there, I want to say a huge thank you to all of my incredible patrons. Your patronage continues to be instrumental in helping me create high quality podcast content, and I can't thank you enough. I'm so grateful to you for believing in me and in what I'm creating here on Psychic Matters. And if you're listening and you'd like to become a patron, there are plenty of wonderful benefits and perks, not least my legendary monthly patron meetings and opportunities to receive a free one-to-one past life regression or time travel reading with me, then please do visit patreon.com/psychicmatters and you can sign up. I'd love to welcome you. And for those who may not have heard yet, next year I am offering a 6-month mentorship program with me called The Art of Remote Viewing. As you all probably know by now, I'm absolutely passionate about all things psychic, and I have created the most amazing, if I may say, course where I will teach you how to transcend your physical senses in order to see across space and time, to gather and view information that is non-physical. A remote viewer will tap into the collective unconscious that connects everyone and everything in the universe, and you can use it in psychic detection. If you're looking for information about a case, you can hover above maps and decide what direction to take. You can view a person's home or travel with them as they go to work. You can travel with either the perpetrator of a crime or the victim. You can use remote viewing in mediumship to travel with and through the eyes of your spirit communicator, and you can use it in one-to-one psychic readings, and you can use it to predict the outcome of any event or situation that has multiple outcomes. So if you want to learn the secrets of your own extraordinary innate psychic ability, please do come and join me on this unique 6-month mentorship program and allow me to teach you techniques and methods to strengthen and sharpen your innate remote viewing skills. Go to my website, which is the old 3 W's, www.anteato.com, A-N-N-T-H-E-A-T-O.com, and go to online courses and events. And now I'd like to introduce this week's guest, manifestation expert Mandy Morris. In this episode, Mandy explains how manifestation can be fast, yet it does require us staying in alignment with our best intentions and highest good, and managing our defeating thoughts, feelings, and actions. If you have always wanted to manifest the life of your dreams, please keep listening as Mandy generously shares some of the tools of the most highly effective manifestors. Mandy Morris, entrepreneur, philanthropist, and manifestation expert, welcome to Psychic Matters.
Thank you for having me. As you know, I'm really excited.
I know, Mandy, we are thrilled to have you on the show today because manifestation is not something I've covered yet on this podcast. And you are a very special person indeed, in that you hold the secrets of the most highly effective manifestors out there, so much so that you've written a fantastic book called 8 Secrets to Powerful Manifesting, How to Create the Reality of Your Dreams, published, of course, by Hay House. So congratulations on the book.
Thank you. It's funny, actually, that was a manifestation in and of itself.
Fabulous. I want to hear all about it. We want to know your methods. And I know because I've read your book, you very kindly sent it ahead of time so that I could read it in preparation for this interview. But I know that your methods are really fun and that they focus very much on raising our energetic vibration. But Mandy, I know a lot of us are not living our best lives. So how do we start to change that and to manifest the life of our dreams?
I feel like because myself, and since you've read my book, you know a little bit of my backstory. I was not by any means born with a silver spoon in my mouth. And so my life, seeing how dysfunctional it was, what I chose moving forward, just the toxicity of the environment that I had, I realized that I always felt like the life I wanted, or the ability, although I didn't call it manifesting at the time, the ability to have the life I wanted or change or turn around my life, it felt so out of reach. I perceived that I was someone who wasn't ever going to get it because of my past, because of my programming. So the first piece that I always say is you have to believe that it is possible. You don't have to like toxic positivity and be like, everything's going to be amazing right away. No. But we need to get to a state of curiosity, neutrality, and potential. So when I started saying, you know what, maybe I don't have the tools right now, but maybe I can find them. Maybe I can learn them. Maybe I can become who I truly am. And that will be wonderful. Just maybe that first space is, do I believe it's possible? Because if your brain does not perceive that something is possible, forget about it. It's never going to happen. You will not find the answers. You will not be looking for it. So getting yourself into the state of possibility.
Yeah. And I think that's, I mean, obviously that's vital to the whole process, right? But also I think we have a habit of being quite negative. And I tell you something, since reading your book, I've noticed what my thoughts do, that they constantly go back. They love the negative. They're not often speaking in a positive fashion. They just go back to the negative. And for a while, I can believe it's possible and I can believe everything's great. And then I'll revert because that's habit. So how do we move forward from there?
So that's a piece of it, right? You're like, oh, I was doing so well. And then I slap back down. That's almost a part of the programming, is that we perceive that in those moments where we energetically dip, we don't see it as just a simple oscillation. That energy is just always fluctuating. It's when we hit those high peaks and then we begin, you know, the slight octave down, that we instead place meaning on it and go, oh, I had it. It's starting to go away. And then we pour our consciousness into the idea that we're going to totally roller coaster dive down. And so we do, because wherever we direct, that whole saying that Tony Robbins says, where consciousness goes or where thought energy goes, energy flows. Absolutely. But I call it consciousness. So wherever we pour our consciousness, it will continue to build, you know, the holographic reality around us, if you will. And so the biggest piece is in that dip, when really energy is just, we're in a frequency soup. We're going to feel all different types of frequencies all day long. But the ones that hit us and make us energetically dip, those are the ones we pay attention to, so that we don't dip anymore. Like you said, that cycle of, I kind of just revert back to the negative. That's just a neurological wiring right now, but that can change to where no matter what happens, it's a positive trigger. And it actually causes you to elevate your vibration, because you're seeing whatever is happening as feedback, as something that's here to help you evolve, not something that's here to sabotage you.
I love that. I love that oscillation, that actually, because we're on a downward, doesn't mean we're on a right down and we're never coming back up. Really, really love that. And what I did notice, Mandy, about when I did change my thinking according to your fantastic book instructions, that I suddenly began to feel incredibly light of heart and light of mind. And I felt the most positive I felt for a very long time, because I did this practice before we, you know, for about a week since before we've met today. So
that means so much. That means so freaking much. And that's going back to what you said, like, I truly believe growth can be fun. And as you work through the more dense pieces that come from trauma and the programming, all that stuff goes away eventually. And growth becomes literally just fun. It's like the problems that show up, you're like, what a fantastic problem to have. I am excited to unravel this, because I know it's like a slingshot. I'm going somewhere even more amazing, you know?
Yeah, that's fantastic. And so, Mandy, we believe it can happen. Then what do we do?
So this is kind of the mixture and the motion, and you know this because you read the book, but there's a few steps. I wish I could be like, just snap your fingers and click your heels and then we're there, you know? And I think that that's kind of why I wrote a book about manifestation, was that I wanted to change the conversation around manifestation, because it's been perceived as this, you know, blink three times, turn around, and then, you know, blessings fall on your lap. And although it does actually get that way, that's why I say manifestation is the psychology the science and the woo-woo, the spiritual aspect. That spiritual aspect or the miraculous, beautiful manifestations, that comes after we've done some of the work. So going back to your question, when I look at what's next, okay, I believe it's possible, but I have no idea how to get there. Then we jump into the psychology of it. We manage our triggers, as in those energetic dips, right? So when I am about to vibrationally dip, or something that I do not like, but I am in resonance with, hits my field, my energetic field, going into physics, the science, right? It hits my field. And for some reason, I place meaning on it. What do I do with it? So if a boss comes in and yells at you, you could choose to be angry. You could choose to feel really bad about yourself. You could choose to do nothing. You could choose to fight back, but you chose it. And we forget we're actually choosing our emotions. And so that first piece is, how am I interacting? Understanding, which is a, you know, a long-winded answer, but how am I interacting with my environment? Why do I choose the energies, the emotions, and the reactions that I choose? And most often, the reason that we're not manifesting what we want, or what I call counter-manifesting, because we're manifesting all the time, like it or not, it's not like our energy shuts off randomly. We'd be dead. So we're always having a communication system with the universe. When we bring that communication system to the conscious mind, instead of letting it stay buried in the subconscious, we can consciously create or co-create versus creating from the subconscious mind, which is creating from all of our traumas, our programming, our past, and basically our fears, which all sit in a denser vibration, which is why we counter-manifest, which is why those denser vibrations create things we don't want, or we get what we want and it goes away just as quickly, because we're not in that vibration where it naturally exists. We're trying to kind of like swim upstream, if you will.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And what about the science? What does the science say, Mandy, about manifesting?
So I actually had learned this. I used to study a total self-study by all means, but I found myself in a lot of different rooms with like NASA scientists in my early 20s. When I was totally lost, by the way, I had no idea what the heck I was doing with my life. Was not happy, was in dysfunctional relationships and all that jazz. But I did still, I have a lineage on my father's side of quite genius IQs. I hate saying that because it sounds so pretentious, but it is true. So I'd find myself in these rooms with these scientists and these doctors and these people who are doing unbelievable things for humanity, totally behind the scenes. Even if I said their names, although I can't, you wouldn't know who they are, but they were these beautiful, brilliant minds. And I was like, one, how did I get here? What the heck? And so it led me into a bunch of different studies. And what I noticed specifically with when I was studying psychosomatic illnesses, so illnesses that are manifested, you know, in the mind, and then they show up in the body, right? I was like, if we can move matter with our thoughts in our body, we can literally create tumors. We can create Tourette's. We can create different allergies. We can move things around in our physical body. One of the densest things there is, of course, we can move all matter through our thought frequency. But what conversations are we having? And so when I'd be working with these patients who had like some crazy heart problem, and the root, which we would know this from different technologies, the root would be psychosomatic, and the root would be because I never experienced unconditional love, or because I didn't receive comfort at this time in my life, something that was had nothing to do with radiation or physical, you know, ailments. It was literally something that they experienced, you know, in their nurturing, in their love, in their emotional field. I was like, that's manifestation. That is the science of it in that sense. So I studied physics and metaphysics and quantum physics and so forth. But when I started understanding how energy truly interacts with us also being energy, and what that conversation looks like and how particles communicate or interact, if you will, I was like, of course, we are literally, not egotistically speaking, but we are at the epicenter of our reality in so many ways that we will never even comprehend in this human plane. But it's completely that way. And because I'm a prove it to me person, when I started studying, you know, the science, not behind manifestation, I tied it to manifestation. I was just studying physics and quantum physics, like the split test theory and all that jazz. And I was like, if we can sit there and scientifically speaking, the observer can make the particles move in different ways based on what the particle assumes we are doing. Come on. This is happening on a whole nother level that we have forgotten about. And so then, of course, you know, I started testing that out and seeing crazy things happen. And it was just, okay, it's totally, manifestation is rooted in science.
I love that. I wish I knew more about quantum physics and quantum mechanics. It sounds like you've got a very good understanding of it there.
I wouldn't say super, super good. Like sometimes when people are like, you know, neuroscience, and I'm like, I couldn't even tell you. If you point at one part of the brain, I'll probably forget what it's called. It's this different understanding, if that makes sense. And all of my friends who are, you know, very scholarly, they're like, how do you understand this stuff? You didn't study it directly. I'm like, I just understand how things work. So when I was studying physics and, you know, continued to, and I like to look at like weird old files, my husband's like, I'd go out really excited and I'm like, I want to read it to you. He'd be like, stop reading me these things. I don't understand them. I don't understand. I'm like, okay, well, let me break it down. This is what it's saying. He's like, whoa. So I kind of just know how to bridge the gap, I guess, between all of this sciencey jargon to, okay, well, what do we do with it? Great. You know it, but how do you settle it into your heart? How do you utilize it in this human experience, which is what we're all looking for?
But that's what I love about your book, because you talk about it in a very scientific way. So it's not fluff and nonsense. It comes from a very scientific base and it's fact, therefore.
Thank you so much. That was so important to me because I'm like, prove it to me, you know? Even though ancient wisdom already knows and science is just trying to prove it, I still like it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So we know it's possible. We know that our thoughts create our reality. We know that what goes on in our mind, you talk about our dominant frequency. Maybe say a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So, and this goes back to what we were talking about of when we hit that dip and then we freak out. And I used to be that way. I'd be like, I didn't wake up feeling amazing. I was amazing yesterday, but not today. Everything is ruined. We're screwed. Our manifestation has completely gone out the window. And we tell ourselves that. And then we, you know, of course, create that reality. And so I like thinking about it from the state of, if I want to create, you know, anything in life, no matter what it may be, when we get to that state of, okay, this is pure possibility, and we have started to manage those pieces, those psychological pieces, then we step into the embodiment of that energy. And embodiment is basically staying in that dominant frequency more often. And so I always say, if you have a bad day, that's all right. Focus on getting 1% better every day. And what we're looking for is, how can we get ourselves into a higher vibration most of the time? It's the most dominant vibration we're experiencing. And I actually learned this years ago when I was, you know, in that kind of sciencey world, and a physicist was talking about why the world kind of looks as it is sometimes. And I have many thoughts around it, but I'll just kind of speak from his mouth. And he had said, each person has their own consciousness. But then if you add another person, they now have a collective consciousness. So right now, you and I, we have a collective consciousness. And then let's just pretend like you were in Colorado with me, the whole state of Colorado as a collective consciousness, and all of America, and then all of the world. Planetarily speaking, the dominant vibration is typically not the greatest. It's a little bit more on the lower end, which is why what we send outwardly into the proverbial universe, what we receive back are things like tsunamis, tornadoes, you know, crazy things happening in the world, because, and this is his, you know, belief, this, and I pulled apart from that, but his belief was that's why we experience, you know, all this negativity is because most of the planet is not vibrating at a high enough rate. Now, the way I see that, because I believe that we are creating our reality inwards and outwards, and although we are collective in oneness, there's an infinite number of possibilities and realities here. So I try to stick to one, right? One consciousness, if you will. But I know that for myself, even if I go through different variations of energy throughout the day, I get angry for one moment, I get sad for another. It's not so much that I experienced that emotion. It's what did I do with it and how long did it last that deciphers my dominant frequency. So I call it the dominant frequency effect. And it's so nice because it lets everyone take a breath to be like, even if I had a bad day, I'm not sabotaging everything. Even if I find myself in a low vibration, I don't spend all of my energy judging myself. I spend all of my energy getting out of that low vibration. And so it's a lot more empowering that way.
And how do you get out of that lower vibration? What is your method for getting out of that? Because I think a lot of us do feel, you know, we go into these spirals. And so we look at someone like you who has the secret, like, how do we deal with it?
Yeah, well, I certainly didn't for years. So I'm speaking from a personal experience here. So I used to live in a very low vibration all the time, and my life showed as such. So first piece is, in the process of manifestation, emotions are everything. And so at the very, imagine three tiers, you know, stacked on top of one another. Let's go to the bottom one first. The very bottom, it's where most of the planet lives on, or most of humanity. And it is that emotions run us. Something happens and we get triggered. And the answer to your question, I would call it trigger management, but let's dive into it, right? So we get triggered. Our boss yells at us. Somebody didn't load the dishwasher correctly. Someone gave us a bad look. Whatever it is, in some type of stimuli happens and it produces a response from us. Now, in this example, it does not produce a good response. It's always a lower vibrational emotion, anger, sadness, hopelessness, shame, guilt, fear, whatever, something, you know, below the vibration of neutrality. And everybody here can Google or research the emotional vibrational chart, and they'll see literally exactly where all of these emotions vibrate on. It's really interesting. So anyways, that's why we know shame has a very specific energy. Anger has a very specific vibration. We can feel it from people because we know it. So any hoodle doodle, that lower place is emotional, upheaval. Something happens and boom, we don't even realize that we could have chosen the emotion because it's such an immediate reaction. The reason that is, again, is from our past and our programming. We are neurologically, our brain is wired to have certain immediate gut knee-jerk responses, but that can change. Neuroplasticity. Oh. So we reach the second step, one step above that whole emotions run us. The second step is neutrality. Because I'd notice when people are like, just be positive, I'd be like, screw you, because I can't do that. I don't know how to do that. Like, I am in complete hopelessness. You think I'm going to go to joy and happiness? No, that's not going to happen. So instead, I was like, how could I start climbing up this emotional vibrational scale? How can I raise my vibration, not jump, right? And so I noticed neutrality was the next space. And what I would call that is curiosity. One of the biggest things I tell people is, don't get emotional, get curious. If we can see emotions as just feedback to something going on internally, to something triggering us from our past, to something we are telling ourselves that may or may not even be true, how empowering to realize that when someone walked in and they looked at you funny and you thought it was because you don't look good that day, and then bam, you slam down vibrationally because you think you're not enough. Which some people literally go down that type of a spiral. And all it was is they were about to sneeze. So they had a weird look because they were about to sneeze and then they caught it, right? It's what we tell ourselves. So we get curious. Why is this the emotion I chose? And again, choose. We did choose the emotion, even if it feels like it came so fast that you didn't choose it. You did choose it. It's just happening so fast. And then that top tier, this is where master manifestors sit. We use emotions to manifest because emotions are a huge, powerful unit of consciousness. So when we can attach certain emotional experiences to certain things, you can create anything you want, because higher vibrational emotions like joy, enlightenment, happiness, glee, whatever, all that stuff, it literally vibrates higher and faster. So it moves matter faster. Therefore, matter becomes made manifest faster. And so that top tier is so incredible, because when you can attach an emotion, and the funny thing is too, I've noticed most people say, I want the house on the hill. I want the $1 million. I want the soulmate. I want the purpose work. No, you don't. You want the emotion you think it will produce out of you. You want to feel accomplished. You want to feel loved. You want to feel, as everybody does and deserves to be, happy. But when we realize that the 3D things that we give our power away to, that has an entanglement of all of this other stuff attached to it, well, of course, money isn't going to show up, because subconsciously you think that money's evil. Or you think that if you had money, everyone would use you. Of course, you don't want your soulmate because you saw your parents divorce as you grew up. So all this stuff gets entangled in it. So I always imagine on that top tier, that master manifestor space, we are sitting in a space of pure possibility, because we know how to attach emotions to things if we so choose. But what would be the precursor of that? You know how to bring certain emotions out of you. You know how to produce them, in a snap, if you will, so that you're just naturally on this incredible, beautiful vibration, which all the good stuff is already there. So you're not having to work towards it. It just exists on the same plane as you.
So what you're saying, I think, maybe I could put it like this, possibly what you're saying is, when we are out of control of our own emotions, that's quite often when we feel the anger and we're not really thinking about it. We're just letting our emotions run riot in our mind. But if we were able to step back from that and look at them and change them, that's the key, is it?
Yes. I call it the 5 steps back method. It's like, okay, instead of me saying I am anger, which means I have just become it, I cannot see past it. I almost put on the sunglasses of anger and it's all I see through. But what if we could take those off for a moment and put on a higher perspective, put on love's glasses, or I call it, you know, God's or higher self's glasses, and see, could it mean something else? Is there a more empowering emotion I could experience right now? And regardless of what happens, and the cool thing too, is that over time, you start defaulting to those beautiful vibrations, regardless of what the world is showing you in that moment. So I noticed this one time, I was in Sedona with my mom, and we were going to do a mastermind event. This was years ago. And she was going to come and take my oldest son back to a different area so that we could do our event and all this stuff. She brought my nephews up. We were having a great time, but she was supposed to take them back that evening. Well, things did not work out as planned. She did not take them. I ended up having to get them a hotel. My son broke his arm. All this crazy stuff was happening. And I had a ton of people who had paid a lot of money to learn from me coming the next day. And I was up until 4 a.m., you know, had to get up at 6. And my mom was like, I am so sorry, you spent all of this money. You know, nothing happened. I was supposed to be here to support you with your work. And I was like, I got to spend more time with you. I never get enough time with you. I was like, it was so much fun. We had a great time. And I realized I was so grateful in that moment because what used to be a huge trigger, which was things not going as planned, because I was a control freak, and also money. I hated spending money unless it was planned. Neither of those, they were just water off a duck's back. I was like, I've grown more than I even realized. So even when something seemingly triggering or previously triggering happened, I defaulted into gratitude and happiness and just go with the flow. And that allowed for all of these beautiful blessings to pour out from it instead of me spiraling down and then not being in a place where I could have served the people who were there.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think it's something that we have to sort of recalibrate throughout the day, because we do tend to look at negative things. Well, I guess I can only really speak for what goes on in my mind, but
you're speaking for everyone, trust me.
I really, because I know, like when I read your book and I was carrying out the things that you were instructing in it, I realized how often I went to the dark side with my thoughts. And so I had to just be very mindful to keep turning those thoughts around throughout the day. It got easier and easier as the couple of weeks went on. But we do have to, it's not just you're going to be that way forever. I feel it's a constant work.
Yeah. And I always say, like, if I'm not growing, I'm dying. But what you talked about is what's called pattern interrupts, right? It's where, okay, I realize I'm going down this. I don't feel completely in control, but I think I'm vibrationally dipping. I need to interrupt that energy. And so I always ask myself, what would I normally do in this situation that would perpetuate it or keep it going? And let me do the opposite. And so I always do like a bunch of jump squats because it moves my energy around, or I'll go in front of a mirror and do like a ridiculous dance or make weird faces to where I'm like, I can't take this seriously anymore. Or if I'm in a triggering situation and there's other people involved, I turn everybody into a Disney character. I'm like, Daffy Duck is yelling at me right now. I don't care. Like, it's funny to me, you know? And so you're just desensitizing that emotional response. And then over time, the brain starts going, this is no big deal. Every time we just see Daffy Duck, or every time it's just, you know, it's whatever. It doesn't matter. So exactly, when you're like, I'm starting to just kind of shift it a little bit, you're interrupting literally the electricity that's shooting in your brain most often. And you're literally interrupting the energy of it flowing towards the reality in which you don't want, which could be, you know, a million different things. And instead you're pivoting back to, I'm in charge of my energy. I'm in charge of my emotional state. Here is how I will redirect that energy. And it's so empowering, and beautiful things come from it.
I really love that. We can think, when our boss does come in and yell at us, we can turn him into Daffy Duck, or turn her into Daffy Duck.
Absolutely. Totally.
Fabulous. It's simple great stuff. Yeah. And so in your book also, you talk about letting go of the outcome. So say a little bit about that.
So this has been one of my biggest life lessons, I think, and I call it surrender. And it shows up all the time. Like, sometimes we think, at least this is what I thought, people who are really great at manifesting or really successful or really happy, man, they must have it all figured out. It must be so complicated up there. And it's not. It's really simplistic. The answers are really simplistic. And so surrender is something that's showed up over and over and over again. And every time I or any of my clients have surrendered, there's a certain energy that comes from surrender. Not like I don't care anymore type of energy, but the I trust in the new reality, and you surrender to that. And it's a beautiful, you feel like almost enveloped in love. That beautiful energy beautiful manifestations come through every time. So anytime where I'm like, this isn't working, I'm trying to white knuckle it, or I call it like play the human game. Let me follow all the rules. It's going to take me 5 years. I'm not good enough yet. Whatever, all that stuff. When I surrender and I'm like, all right, universe, bring me the fastest path. Bring me the lessons that need to show up. And I get myself back into what I call the state of pure possibility. Beautiful things come through. Magic happens. And so detachment is basically the ability to say, I don't know what it will be. I don't know when it will come, but I know and I trust that it will be beautiful. And it's this like handshake with the universe. And it's so, so beautiful. And every time I look back and I'm like, thank goodness I could detach from what I wanted, because I was dreaming so small. I had no, my mind could not conceptualize the life I live today. I didn't know it was available to me. It was too far-fetched. I had to drop into my heart because my mind couldn't create that. But drop into my heart and detach from the need for it to look a certain way at a certain time, which was all coming from my trauma and programming anyways. Beautiful, beautiful things happened. It was like I jumped right into my soul self instead of living in my human, you know, all the muck that still existed there.
That's brilliant. And you talk also in your book about trusting the higher power. And do you think that we are the higher power, or is there another higher power? You talked before about us all being connected, you know, the conscious collective.
You know, I think if you ask me this in 5 years, I'll probably have a different answer because I'm still learning myself. But where I sit today with it is that we are, actually wrote this when I was 16 years old in one of my journals, because I'm an avid journaler. I've journaled since I was 5 and I'm like a nut about it. But I remember writing and I actually read it a few years back. I've never forgotten it, that we are all fractals of God. Now, I'm not religious. I don't think that God is like a guy in the sky throwing down lightning bolts like Zeus or anything. But I do believe in this energy, but I believe that we are a part of it. And I think if all of us came together, we would be the higher power. But we're all kind of like fractals of it right now. We're pieces of that, which is why I also believe that we're coming back into oneness. And that's why it's not painful to grow. It's painful to stay small, because we, just like the universe, are ever expanding in all directions. And when we try to halt that process, it causes us pain. But a part of that expansion is coming back into kind of this oneness, you know, as I call it. And by all means, I know I say it in the book, I personally, this is an integrity thing, I think that people should manifest with a higher power in mind. I think it becomes beautiful. I think you move back into oneness, and it's just the right way to do it. I also, people ask me, well, how are really evil people, how do they have money? And, you know, I've had that question before. They have some of the things they want. I'm like, one, I can tell you they're absolutely miserable. They live in a very dense vibration, but they have alignment with what they believe. Manifestation is not about being a good person, unfortunately, although it's much better and it happens much more beautifully and much faster in many ways. But there is, as long as someone is in alignment, in fullness, all of their, you know, I call it their cells, if all of them are in unison with something, they will surely get it. That's manifestation. It's not like, you know, the universe has a consciousness of good and bad. It's just a Xerox. It'll just give you whatever you're, you know, you're putting out. And so I always just kind of blanket that with, if you are a good person, if you keep the collective in mind, if you manifest in the highest good of all, and you have a higher power that you also are connected to, or you feel you are a part of, the manifestations are so beautiful and so fulfilling.
That is beautiful. It's beautifully described as well, Mandy. You spoke there about journaling, and I just wanted to ask you about, you say you have been an avid journaler since the age of 5 years old, and I know how I personally journal, but I always sort of wonder if I'm doing it right. What do other people do in their journaling? So as an avid journaler, how do you journal? What do you write? Is it just writing? Is it automatic writing, channeled? You speak in your book about channeling. Do you do drawings? Just interesting for people to know how you personally journal.
It's a little different every day, depending on what I'm going through, what I want to, you know, experience, but it changed over the years too. So when I was 5, I was writing to God. I would be like, and I thought God was a guy in the sky type of thing. And so I'd be like, say hi to grandpa for me. Please help my friend who has, you know, her mom has cancer, you know, and all that. And then my mom said I would actually leave some of my journal notes outside because I thought that the wind would pick them up and bring them to God, because that's the only way that he would get them. So it's changed over the years. So now I write, you know, kind of to myself, to my higher self as well. And it's a mixture. Every morning though, I pop open my journal. It's the first thing I do. And I brain dump and I emotion dump. I ask myself, what do I feel? And if I can, I go further with, why do I feel it? So, because everyone, I don't wake up super refreshed every morning. Sometimes I wake up and I have anxiety, or I'm stressed out, or I'm like, whoa, okay, I'm just feeling weird. And I have to check in. And, you know, the book has those check-ins, one of them being, is it even mine? Right. But I always do an emotion dump. So then I can go into my day fresh. I feel heard. I feel like I've connected to my higher power because journaling is a part of that. I almost always, I've noticed in the past 7, 8 years since I've really been on like a proper journey and happy and doing it right, I've said thank you so many times. It's almost every single journal entry at the end. I'm like, I'm so blessed. Thank you. Even in the moments where I was going through total turmoil, there was a genuine gratitude to whatever it was. So I think that's so important. And sometimes, yeah, there's little stick figure drawings in there of me or something I want to create, and then absolutely conscious channeling. And now it kind of says messages for me or messages for whoever it's coming through. And I write it at the top and then I just write until it's done, and then reread it, go to my husband and read it or whoever it's for, you know, pass it along to them if it's meant, you know, for them and the highest good of all. So it's a little bit different each day, but I sit and I go, okay, the intention is probably most important when you're journaling. Why are you journaling? What do you want to discover? Do you want to clear? Do you want to connect to a higher power? Do you want to know yourself? All of the above. And when you set that intention, I think sometimes different pieces of how you can journal will just kind of naturally unfold. Whatever feels good, but it should feel therapeutic.
And what would you journal first thing in the morning or throughout the day, or just thinking, oh, do you know what? I'll just pick up my pen now.
Both. So always in the morning and always at night. That's just for me. But sometimes throughout the day as well, I carry, you know, I have this little, gosh, it's somewhere I just had it actually. It's on the floor over there. I've got this, you know, I keep little ones in my purse. I probably work through like 5 journals at a time. So it's, if someone tried to read it, it'd be really confusing because I just keep them all over the house because I'll be like, oh, a thought, an idea. Or, you know, I start feeling a little heavy and I'm like, journaling is actually one of my pattern interrupts. And then I'll just go, or if I'm like outside in nature, I'm definitely bringing my journal because I know divine messages will come through or something that just feels peaceful that I want to like stamp the energy in. So I carry it around all the time, but morning and night is like my musts. Even if I don't feel like it, even if I write one sentence, it's just, I force myself. I know it's the right thing. And then throughout the day, it tends to just kind of unfold wherever it feels needed. So I just keep it handy.
I love that. I'm going to start putting journals all over my house as well.
It's so good. It's so, so good for you. It really is. Actually learned this because I have a lot of addicts in my family, and I had addictive personalities through like eating disorders and, you know, different things, not so much substances. But I noticed that when you write, a lot of alcoholics do this and addicts in general, it slows the thoughts down so much, which is why people don't like journaling. And I'm like, if you don't like to journal because it's so slow, you absolutely need to do it because it lets everything fully marinate in such a fast paced world. What a beautiful like breath to take every day.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Love it. Love it. Definitely. I used to get anxiety leaving the house without a pen and paper because I love to write, not necessarily loving to journal every day, but yeah, I love to write. So if I leave the house without a pen and paper, just in case I have an idea, I get like, oh, I have to have pen and paper.
Yeah, totally. It's that conscious channeling. It's got to come through.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fabulous. Mandy, you've written this beautiful book, 8 Secrets to Powerful Manifesting. Why do you feel that you came across 8 secrets? What is the 8?
8 means a lot to me. It's literally, you know, the numerology of it and, you know, infiniteness sideways. It's literally the infinity. And it's always showed up. My husband and I were married 8/8/18. I was born on November 8th. So when I decided, well, I was actually asked to write the book. And when I was asked to write the book, I was like, okay, what am I going to write about? What does the world need to hear from me? The number 8 just came right out. It was kind of just a slightly channeled, but definitely divinely guided number.
I think that's beautiful. And what do you want people to take away from the book once they've read it? What are you hoping that it will do for people?
You know, I had my thoughts around it, but since the book's been out for a couple of weeks now and I've heard what it's done for people, I'm like, next level. So now I'm like, I want it to do whatever it is supposed to do. And that was kind of always has been my intention in my work. I'm not like, it must do this and it must do that, because I believe and I surrender to some higher power, or the collective will decide if they need it. And if whether it hits one person or a million people or 10 million or whatever it is, I'm cool with it. I got no ego about it at all. So that was my first piece when I first started writing it. Once the book was about to be released, I was like, I want people to feel unconditional love. And that's something that, you know, we didn't really talk about too much, but it's, I think that's why I'm on the planet, is the frequency of love. As silly and woo-woo as it sounds, it's such an integral piece of my work, even when I was working clinically. And so I wanted people to feel a frequency of love that didn't have any pain attached to it. And although the book by no means did that directly, I feel like, and what I'd heard was, you know, through the words, through even the audio version, that they could feel something that they had never really felt before. Sometimes it's a very specific frequency. I've always been known for that for some reason. Now I'm like, this book is doing crazy things. And I think the biggest thing now, and I think my intention will continue to change, is empowering people. When you read it, it's like you literally have all the tools. And I didn't know that no one was teaching tools when it came to manifestation. They were talking about the energy of it, but then everyone's looking around like, so how do we do it? How do we get there? And so the idea and hearing how empowered people feel over themselves and the mastery they are gaining over themselves and the beautiful things that naturally unfold from there, that's totally my intention right now, is just empowering the world to know thyself.
I love that. And self-mastery is so important. And, you know, I think it's easy to love other people, but sometimes I think it can be so difficult to love ourselves.
Yeah. Actually, one of the, as you know, one of the secrets in the book is all about self-love and love. And at first, when we were talking about writing that chapter, they were like, well, I mean, love, self-love is kind of, people get kind of turned off by it. And I'm like, that's because they have rules around it. Self-love, self-care, turning that energy inwards is not me first, it's me too. And, you know, when I first started on this journey of, you know, I'm going to, you know, show up for the world, I didn't do it for myself. I didn't love myself enough for that. I really didn't. I, in my moment where my life 180'd and all this information started downloading into me, was when I had promised God that I would serve humanity. And I looked in the mirror, literally, I wrote about this in the book. I looked in the mirror and I said, humanity, I don't know what I'm here for. Show me the way. And humanity, I will serve you. I am here to serve. And I'm naturally wired as a helper. So it works for, you know, my kind of natural wiring. But I was like, I'm here to serve. Let that be that. And so through loving others, I actually did learn in some ways to love myself. But I realized there was many times where love, turning it inwards, was boundaries. Love was taking time alone. So instead of this very like floaty idea of, well, how the heck do you love yourself? I love my hair. I love my skin. I love my... No, it is sometimes the steps that allow for you to just feel yourself. Because I was such a people pleaser, and most of us are, or we're just in such an energetic suit, we don't know who we are. So we're having a hard time loving ourselves, not because we don't love ourselves, but because we don't know who we are. But at the core, every time someone has met the true version of them, which happened to me, which is why I'm so big on the whole authentic self thing, is you fall madly in love with who you are. It's such a natural thing to love who you truly are, which is why so much of my work is revolved around removing the stuff that isn't who you are. And then the love is just naturally there.
And you have a company called Authentic Living. Tell us a little bit about the work you do with that.
So Authentic Living was established in 2016, and we have millions of students now, I'm so proud to say. Originally, it was just me teaching manifestation, healing trauma. It's got a few legs. We did some parenting courses for some time. Then my husband, the spiritual activator, jumped in. He's an energy healer, and he teaches healers all over the world. He's an amazing, amazing man. And so now Authentic Living has practitioners, coaches, healers, students in over 60 countries. It's this incredible body of knowledge. We're now helping first responders. I train psychiatrists and therapists. So we've been infiltrating the therapy world. We serve, you know, celebrities and world leaders and Olympians, you know, all that fun stuff as well. And my most exciting thing is that it branched off into philanthropic work and a foundation. And so we do a lot of work with battered women. 10% of everything Authentic Living makes goes into that, and or our philanthropic work in the Philippines. My husband's Filipino. He was born and raised there. And so we have some incredible work that we get to do there with orphans, abandoned elderly, you name it, all kinds of amazing things. So we get to basically live a constant life of giving back. That's what Authentic Living really is.
That just sounds amazing. What beautiful work you're both doing out there in the world. That's incredible.
Thank you. It was so funny. I was, before you and I popped on, I was talking to my mom, and she's like the only person that I can brag to without feeling, you know, pretentious. I was like, Mom, I'm just helping so many people. And I'm just, and I was kind of, you know, crying. It's just gratitude tears. And I was like, I just, every day I keep waking up going, I get to help this many people. And we've helped this many people not kill themselves and live their best life and serve other people and help the world. Like, I just feel like God is just thumbs upping me right now, you know? So it is everything I ever hoped and dreamed for.
Well, I'm certainly thumbs upping you. It's absolutely brilliant. And I'm sure everybody listening are just in awe of what you're achieving. It's fantastic. And what's so great is you share how you've done or worked through your process, how you've worked out these beautiful secrets to wonderful manifestation, and you share it with everybody in your beautiful book. So where can people buy it, Mandy?
So if they want to get a ton of bonuses as well, because we've got tons of PDFs, meditations, we have a whole day training, actually. If they go to the8secrets.com, they'll be able to get the book there, and it will automatically put them on the list for all the bonuses as well. So the8secrets.com.
Fantastic. And Authentic Living, if they want to go and have a look at the work you're doing there?
AuthenticLivingForLife.com or AuthenticLiving.com.
That's beautiful. And Mandy, what's next for you? I mean, what is next? I mean, your diary, your schedule must be, wow, incredible. But what are you wanting to manifest next?
You know, I've been thinking about that for a bit. And I think the biggest thing is right now expansion of all it is. You know, before it was, we need a new program here. It needs to look like this. And now my husband and I and Authentic Living, we've gotten to this beautiful space where I just see it like in all directions, continuing to grow and reach more people. We've just made some incredible partnerships that I'm so excited about this year. I do see another book in my near future, or at least starting another book. I'm just waiting for the universe to kind of drop that down on my head. And other than that, in my personal world, we just lost a child a few months ago. So we're thinking about, okay, let's get pregnant again and see if there's another little soul ready to join our family. That's really it. That's it right now, which is weird. You'd think that manifestors always have all these goals, but I'm like, my biggest goal is to stay in a really high vibration all the time and then let the magic unfold now.
That is so beautiful. I'm so sorry on the loss of your little child, but I'm so excited for the new adventures for a new little soul to join your family. That would be just beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So Mandy, thank you. Mandy Morris, 8 Secrets to Powerful Manifesting. So please do go and buy her incredible book. I highly, highly, highly recommend it. It's had such an effect on me in such a short time, so very quickly. And I'm just so happy to have been able to talk to you today, Mandy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me and for saying that you like the book. That just means the world to me.
Bless you. Well, I really hope you've enjoyed the episode with Mandy Morris. Isn't she just amazing? The work that she is doing is extraordinary, and she is such an inspiring woman. I absolutely loved talking to her. As ever, the show notes for this episode mentioning all the resources, where to buy Mandy's book, her contact details, etc., and a complete transcription of the entire episode are available over on my website, anteato.com, under podcasts. Don't forget to consider becoming a patron of Psychic Matters on patreon.com/psychicmatters. I'd be so grateful if you would take a peek at that. It takes 4 days to create each podcast episode. And as you know, I always like to keep the quality and the content really high. So if you're getting a lot out of these podcasts and you feel you'd like to contribute in some way, I would love that. And I'd be so grateful. And your contribution will mean I can continue creating top quality podcasts for you to enjoy. I'll be back in a couple of weeks' time. And until then, keep your vibration high. Don't forget those pattern interrupts and let the magic of Mandy Morris's powerful manifestation techniques unfold great things for you. My name is Anne Teato, and thank you for listening to Psychic Matters.